it's very easy in many ways to fear what you don't know. But I think it's almost a philosophical question in the sense whether you do believe that that unknown can be a good thing or a bad thing. So popular press tells one thing. Those in tech tend to think that this could be a good thing. AI can be a good thing. And the fact of the matter is no one knows. No one knows where this can go. No one knows where AI machine learning can take us. And so it is a philosophical decision to say whether one believes that it can be a good thing or a bad thing.
What has to be in place for us to keep it from becoming sort of an apocalyptic vision versus one that's helpful for humanity?
Yeah, so I think, there's a couple of principles. One principle, I think, is the democratization of AI. So what we're trying to do with the Accelerator Zeroth is to back entrepreneurs and founders that want to deal with AI. And so the principle is the more people that deal with AI, the better. There's more built knowledge of how to deal with this particular type of technology, more people building companies on top of it. But it's generally a bigger community of people because you don't know what you don't know. The worst situation is there's a rogue person that's building some algorithm that could be harmful and no one knows anything about it. And so if we can build at least a community or a form of people that appreciate this technology, you can start knowing what's unknown. I think second is the participation of regulators. As much as I'm not the biggest fan of regulation, I think there needs to be some sort of understanding of the regulatory constraint of this. And what I mean by that, this is a very simple example of self-driving cars, right? Every car manufacturer will have a different view on their algorithm in the sense of a car has to make a choice. Who does it protect? They have four passengers, 1, 2, 3, 4, varying ages of the four passengers, then the people outside of the car, and then protecting the car, the actual asset itself. And so I don't think there are clear definitions of what protection that is, that algorithm. And so I think getting some sort of alignment between all the manufacturers, and in a broader sense, getting alignment from kind of the machine learning community about what is government's role to play in this, I think is quite important. And then one side corollary of that is the ethical implications, not only in the car example, but some people have suggested a kill switch, in the sense being able to, if an AI has an algorithm goes amok, how does one activate that switch to kill the algorithm? So I think more discussion needs to be had to understand what that looks like, how to enforce that, how to get people to build that thing or build that kill switch into the algorithm. So I think a couple of these elements still needs to be kind of fleshed out.
For a lot of people, the fear is coming not from what might happen with government regulation or with well-intended development of AI, but what would happen if you have people who are truly set out to do harm? What do you tell people when they come to you with that kind of fear?
I think that's a very legitimate fear. I think I'll draw parallels to any type of technology, right, or weapon or any asset can become bad, can become rogue. There is no answer to that. There is no panacea for that. It's just more amplified with AI.
What about other countries? I mean, we've just watched what we have been told happened during this last election, and the idea that one country might be able to control another country's AI that is involved with government, that's involved in the private sector, somehow get in there and cause a great deal of harm and disruption. How do you see that developing in a way that allows some sense of control?
In some ways, it's so early that governments haven't yet responded to some degree. But I think the White House, there was a White House report on AI. There was a strong recommendation to start promoting and start developing technologies and start supporting research on deep learning on AI. So that will compel other governments to start building their own capabilities. The one thing that I and other people in the community don't want is an arms race, right? A stockpile of talent. Some might compel them to try to work on the government side as well. There are different incentives on both sides. And I think the public sector needs to realize, you know, this type of technology is better if it's democratized, if it, there's a community around it, if there's no kind of arms race.
What do you think that we should be looking for next, or what do you think is going to be the next iteration of AI that will be more broadly shown in the public sector?
Yeah, this is where it starts getting exciting. So again, philosophically, maybe I'm biased, but I do look, you know, on the positive side of this stuff. So I just bought a Google Home. So I think in the home, I think it'll be pretty interesting. Obviously, with self-driving cars, you know, I think voice is going to be pretty interesting medium in 2017. Glasses, visual interface is going to be very interesting medium. And so machine learning has some component to play in this. There's a item called a Hear One, which basically is a hearing device, but it augments your hearing, can filter out certain things and start personalizing for you. What this all means is at some point, if we want to combine this into one general AI, you have things, interfaces, auditory interfaces and visual interfaces that have been optimized already. And it could combine together to form, you know, a general intelligence, if you will.
And I would imagine that would have a lot of applications for assisted technology.
Oh yeah, totally. I think AI will take away some jobs. That is a certainty.
Specifically what?
Theoretically, what AI can do is reduce human variability, right? Human error. So jobs that have a single purpose, routine driving, routine chores, routine scheduling, anything that's very well defined, even accounting, right, has this very well defined rules and systems. Even certain law practices, right?
Research,
right? Very well defined rules, very well defined systems, first to be automated, because that's essentially what a machine can do better than a person, is define where the system is and be able to optimize that system. That will free people to do the things that should have human error and variability. So my wife is an artist. In art, you should have human variability. That is the process to which things become art.
And a conduit to humanity.
Exactly, right. So to our discussion early on, right, as we get more technology into play, as it permeates our life, I think the human interaction gets more celebrated. The human voice gets more celebrated. The human relationships will actually be much more premiumized. People will search out for it. Because it will be even more important, because most of the time you'll be interacting with machines. I'm biased. I believe in the theory I call positivity of AI.
When you talk about human relationships, we've already seen that there are a lot of dating apps and help to be able to find other people and in some ways to be able to matchmake. I mean, there are lots of sites for that. Do you see more of that happening, or is all of this really pointing to the idea that there is something that's just ineffably human that has to call to another human, and that maybe matchmaking via an algorithm or AI is not necessarily something that can define chemistry. Compatibility maybe, but not necessarily chemistry.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think my position on dating apps, and I've tried them all, and I've told my wife it was just research.
I'm glad you said
yeah, I had to caveat it with her. I think what it really does is effectively increase the funnel, right? It increases the probability of finding love is actually very low. It's hard if you think about it. It's hard to find someone that matches you on multiple dimensions. And once you're outside of a nexus of relationships like college, like work where there's a lot of people, it's hard, right? It's hard to find that type of thing. And so it's hard to find somebody else if you're looking for it because you just don't have the mass to be able to do it. And so effectively, that's what Tinder and all those other dating apps is what it does is increases the funnel. So once you create a funnel, it gives you candidates where they are likely matches. But then that's where the human interaction takes over, right? Then you actually have to date, you have to get to know each other, and that, you know, an algorithm can try to solve for that, but I think there's some level of serendipity and chemistry that kind of falls into that.
What do you see happening in Hawaii with job loss or job change because of AI?
If it had an argument, that would be for Hawaii to embrace technology, because the fact is, because I reflect on it, because I'm an advisor to the Estonian government, Estonia has a population of 1.35 million. But Skype has come from Estonia, transfer-wise, and they've really embraced the fact that, you know what, we're small. We're either going to be behind technology, which is kind of the natural inertia, or be in front of it. And so if there's something I would say about Hawaii is it might be because there are a lot of reasons why it should be behind. The next best step in which it could play is being ahead. Then Hawaii kind of work with technology to fit their lives rather than be reactive and just receive shocks of what technology will put into the system.
Which brings us right back to the reason that you're in Hawaii for the East Meets West. It's easier, perhaps, when you're coming in from the outside to take a quick look or listen, in this case, to a lot of the would-be entrepreneurs and startups coming before you. As you've been engaging with some of these people already, does Hawaii, I mean, those who come from Hawaii who you've seen, does Hawaii really have a shot at being able to lead? Because we've been told that for a long time, and as yet, that hasn't really come to fruition.
That's a fair question. I don't know enough about the Hawaiian ecosystem, but I think there's two elements. One is inevitably it will take time. I don't know how long the Hawaiian ecosystem has existed, but most ecosystems, I think, so Bradfeld wrote a book called Startup Communities. I think he was saying that the cycle of a startup ecosystem to rise up is about 5 to 7 years. I think that's kind of what the Boulder example, Boulder, Colorado, I think it took about 5 to 7 years. So that could be one element. So I don't know how long Hawaii has kind of been around, the ecosystem has been around. I think the second thing is it actually hasn't really been a good time. So the last couple of years, the number of exits have not been as many as certain investors would like. But that should be changing in 2017. There are certain rumors of tech companies actually going IPO. The rumor on the street is perhaps this would be a very good year. So because of that, there might be some momentum. And I think, you know, I think 2017 might be a good time to judge whether, you know, whether the Hawaiian ecosystem can grow. I know that's not an intellectually strong answer, though. And I think that's the thing with technology is oftentimes it's hard to predict. It's hard to predict whether an ecosystem can grow. It's hard to predict where the successes are. In many ways, you have to keep on working at it. You have to believe that it's going to be a good thing.
Which goes back to the human element.
It is. You know, technology is really honestly, entrepreneurship is really honestly a human business, right? Good entrepreneurs rise up because there are good mentors helping out, you know, the good entrepreneurs and good founders help them create businesses. But there are 98% chance of failure, right?
Well, that's the whole point, though, that if you're going to fail fast, at least you get to the point where you can see either you have the trajectory to be able to be success, or you find out pretty quickly, this is not a good idea, next.
That's true. Time efficiency is extremely key. It is. So to the question of Hawaii, you know, I hope to see something coming up. I hope to come back again. But I think, you know, we have to kind of wait and see.
Well, on that note, we're going to say thanks very much for joining us this morning. And we'll check back in with you to see whether your ideas of 2017 seem to be coming true or what other great things might be happening or perhaps just stuff we need to know. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me. Thank you.